the refugees that have entered Poland have been non-fighting aged men or boys or children and women. I don't know yet, and the Poles are keeping secret what's and who are in the present surge. There was a spate of reports recently that listeners may have seen, you will have seen, indicating that Poland was preparing to send Polish forces into Western Ukraine to secure a kind of long-term Polish interest in what will be the collapsed state of the Ukraine after the capitulation of the Kiev regime. That would be essentially the territory known as Galicia. That's the territory that the Ukrainian Deputy Prime Minister of Canada, Chrystia Freeland's family, comes from. That's where her grandfather fought with the German army to destroy Russians, Jews, and gypsies and other people that the Freeland family considers to be dead meat to advance their own family interests. Galicia is a Polish interest. Historically has been a Polish territory, and so on. What then, after the report circulated that the Poles were preparing forces to enter Galicia, there have also been reports that the Poles are preparing forces to deploy along the Belarus border. What the Poles have been saying is that, no, we're not going to deploy any Polish forces into the Ukraine. That's a lie. There are a lot of Polish mercenaries. There are a lot of Polish regulars already in the battlefield. What the Poles said, what the Polish government implied and said and hinted was, no, we'll send Ukrainians back to Poland if they are of fighting age and if they're subject to the draft in the Ukraine. So the threat remains that for Ukrainian males anywhere outside of the Ukraine, that they will be rounded up and sent back to the battlefield. Well, why not?
International law, for one thing. I mean, that can't be legal to deport people into a war zone.
I'm not sure that it's a case of deporting, nor you and I and the listeners are in any doubt about how binding international law is when there's genocide in flagrant violation of international court orders in Gaza. What would happen would be that undocumented or otherwise illegal or unestablished Ukrainian men that lack residency papers in these countries might be denied further residency, and the pressure would be on them, the individuals and on those governments to return them. After all, look, if these governments, the German government, the Polish government, the Romanian government, et cetera, the Czech Republic government, make a big song and dance about how they're supplying weapons and training and F-16s, the little Danes and the Norwegians are promising to send, and the Dutch sending their F-16s into the battle, why don't they send the Ukrainians into the battle too? They've got them. What's if they're engaged in sending their equipment, why not send their own Ukrainians? Why will the Ukrainians in their countries, from serving on the battlefield, they're so keen to send their arms and their military staffs? The logic fails, obviously. The entire propaganda and, as you said, sort of legal enforcement of law collapses in what's essentially and obviously NATO war against Russia. NATO war against Russia, we have to repeat, is what we have.
Well, I can see a lot of Ukrainian passports floating downstream, you know, after this. But it's not only the Poles that are talking about sending soldiers into Ukraine. Macron in France is also making a big noise about that. And he's going to be playing host to Zelensky in a couple of days' time. He says, quote, "There's no consensus today on officially sending, taking on, and endorsing ground troops, French ground troops, but in a dynamic situation, nothing should be ruled out." So what about the Chanticleer Macron's threats to be sending in trainers as well to the fight in Ukraine?
Well, I think, again, we have to see these sorts of statements, not for their truth value. They have zero truth value, but for their political purpose. And the political purpose of Macron's statements about not ruling out and then threatening to send French troops into the Ukraine, something endorsed by General Sirski and then contradicted by General Sirski in Kiev. The reason for this stuff is that Macron wants to position himself after the war's lost as the European leader who tried to protect the Ukraine from the lost war. It's a stunt that the French play against the American leadership of the NATO alliance every few years. It's a stunt that that's always hypocritical and false. And regrettably, there isn't a single, not that I'm aware, single French source to explain how the French defense staff, the French generals, oppose sending forces into the Ukraine to fight a losing war, because they know that they will, their men will be killed just as surely as every piece of French military equipment has been killed on the battlefield. The Caesars, the AMC armored vehicles, the Scalp missile we've been talking about. You name the French piece of military equipment that's been delivered to the Ukrainian battlefield, then we're talking about defeat and death of equipment. The French general staff aren't stupid. They're not suicidal. And through retired general staff figures, they've been expressing their opposition to this kind of chest beating and political positioning by people like Macron. So what's happened is Macron threatens to put French there as if that changes anything on the battlefield. It doesn't. It makes them dead. It means that they'll come back and there'll be funerals and there'll be French votes that will go the other way. It's a threat, but it's designed to make Macron look big in the NATO alliance, bigger than the incapacitated, demented president of the United States. That's what it's about. And go on.
Well, sorry to cut in. Well, even so, Putin said last week, he says, quote, there are specialists, French specialists in Ukraine under the guise of mercenaries already. And that's echoed by their foreign ministry spokesperson, Zakharova, saying that Moscow, quote, had confirmation coming in on reports that France is preparing to send its troops to Ukraine, trainers, so-called, as Canada has sent trainers into Ukraine for many years.
Yes, Canada even has a name for it. It's Operation Unifier, which is a bit of a joke. Unifier, Unibomber might be a better term that North Americans recognize. But yes, Canadian supplies of technical staff to operate equipment or senior staff like retired General Trevor Cardieu, who disappeared into the Ukraine after running from rape charges in Canada, in Ontario. This has been going on for years. And what Putin and Madame Zakharova have said is also endorsed by their Twitter launched video clips, which I've seen. A chap from the French Foreign Legion who had been captured explaining how the French system is working. French troops are sent in to appear to be mercenaries, but they report back to their line commands as in French units, et cetera, et cetera. And certainly the technical staff required to operate, repair, rehabilitate, and plan the operation of French military command, they've all been there. And they move in and out of deep bunkers because there have been several direct hits by Russian missile attacks that have killed dozens of Frenchmen in one or two hits. So all of this pretense is best understood not for the battlefield, but for the political objectives at home. So we've spoken in the first part of the program about Boris Johnson's ambition to recover the prime ministry after the Tories lose the July election. And Macron can't face re-election. He's reaching the end of his second term, but there'll be no election, presidential election in France for a couple more years, 2027. So these people are positioning themselves for their own political and financial future. And that's the way.
Well, Johnson and Cameron, talk about two scorpions in a jar. I can't wait to see them battling over the remnants of the smoldering Tories sometime soon.
I think you picked the wrong insect there.
Have I?
Scorpion's a serious creature with a serious sting. Cameron hasn't a serious sting, and neither does Macron. We won't talk about the smallness of their anatomical protuberances. These chaps aren't, these are ants, ambitious ants. They're not scorpions. Scorpions are serious, ants are not. There are lots of ants. There are always going to be lots of ants.
Well, I don't know how demanding partners are, at least Cameron's partners, given his history. I don't think he'll hear many complaints in that regard. Well, not when you talk about the Canadian contribution and how the French military is behind the scenes, not happy with Macron and the political maneuvering that they're using to put the army at risk. In Canada, too, you've written an article, as Ukrainian war is lost, Canadian government is afraid to prosecute Colonel Robert Kearney for saying so. Who's in Canada? We don't get much Canadian news, I'm afraid, John. Who, for Canadians, John, is Captain Kearney, or Colonel Robert Kearney, rather?
Colonel Robert Kearney has been... there are two articles for folks to look up. The Kearney is spelled K-E-A-R-N-E-Y. He's had a distinguished Canadian military career. He's received two commendation medals, meritorious service medals, from the Pentagon, from the United States Army. And he has been serving as deputy staff chief of a NATO reaction force based in Gloucestershire in England. The preposterousness of the charges against him have been amplified by a single journalist named David Puglisi, the defense correspondent of the Ottawa Citizen. And Puglisi has allowed himself to broadcast attacks on Kearney's military career and military competence by the military police and those who are instructing the military police to allege that Kearney had, since 2021, that's quite a few years, right, 3 years, been saying uncomplimentary, disloyal, traitorous things. He's been saying things in private about his superiors. What exactly Kearney has said in the complaints lodged against him relate to the professional competence of Canadian, American, German, and British, and possibly other NATO officers, all planning operations on the Ukrainian battlefield. Now, there's nothing to suggest that Kearney opposed the strategic idea of defense against Russia in Europe, or the NATO principles of security of Canada within the alliance, etc., etc. Kearney is not being charged with disloyalty on those, let's call them strategic objectives. What he's being accused of by the military police and unnamed accusers of different nationalities is he probably said things about the incompetence of other officers in private. In private. He didn't write it down as a report. What's happened against him is a slur campaign designed to stop Canadian officers of colonel and general rank objecting that people like the Ukrainian Deputy Prime Minister of Canada, Chrystia Freeland, and others are putting Canadian lives, equipment, money, and reputation at grave risk of being destroyed in the escalation of the war on in the Ukraine to a war in Europe between NATO and Russia. Tierney has been doing his military job. He's being accused of expressing, possibly with expletives, possibly in other ways, the incompetence or his disagreement with other officers. But that's his job. That's their job.
Yeah, well, one would think. But so is this coming from the Canadian forces, this censure? Yeah. Or is it coming above them from the political circles in Ottawa?
No one can be sure. Puglisi, the reporter, won't answer questions about where he's getting his information from and what he knows but isn't reporting. It's a discreditable attempt by a journalist attached to the Ottawa Citizen to discredit the military honour and competence of a serving officer. That's what Puglisi's doing. And in the two pieces I've reported, Puglisi refuses to answer questions about his own coverage. The second terrible thing is, here I am, you can hear I'm not exactly a Canadian by accent, am I? Here we are broadcasting out of British Columbia, and you've got a person like me offshore trying to say the Kearney case is a major test of Canadian common sense and military competence facing a losing war. That's what Kearney's case represents. And not a single other Canadian journalist has picked up on the case. I don't know why they are so frightened of tackling the story. Obviously, the original allegations were to answer the specific part of your question, Chris, were made a part of a press release by the Canadian Armed Forces, the CAF, and by the Canadian Defence Ministry. To that press release, nothing's been added on the grounds that the case is sub judice, that the charges are still being investigated. But then Puglisi revealed an email he received from the CAF to the effect that the charges haven't been filed yet. Yeah. Puglisi made it seem as if they had been filed. No, allegations of four instances of Kearney saying something somebody else didn't like, who might not have been Canadian, by the way, was aired. And then the ministry and the CAF could, let's say, qualify that by saying, no, the military advocate's office, that's the judicial side, the legal side of the military services, are still investigating whether to prosecute. Well, either you prosecute because you believe the allegation or you don't. But why aren't Canadian reporters following this up? There are many famous cases, and I report a couple of them, in which Canadians stood up to British stupidities and mistakes risking Canadian lives during World War II, including the famous case against General Montgomery. And you can read about that in the second piece I've done. Canadians have not only subscribed to the Freeland idea of the Ukraine war against Russia, but the military forces are subject to pressure tactics like this, that if they say, hey, wait a minute, Canadian lives are at stake here. We're not going to risk Canadian lives in a losing war. If you say that, you could be charged by the military police for disloyal conduct and dismissed, losing your pension.
But as you said, he hasn't been charged.
Not been charged, no.
We don't know, in at least the latter cases, we don't know what he said or who he said it about. They're not releasing it. The reason I would suggest that it's not being reported in Canada is because Kearney's not talking. The Canadian Forces isn't talking. Nobody's talking and nobody's offering anything for anybody to write about right now. So, I mean, that would be my first guess. But when you talk about General Harry Creerer in the Second War taking issue with Montgomery, we all know the British use their colonials. Well, Gallipoli is a prime example in the First Great War of how they're used as cannon fodder. And they're, Creerer stood up to Montgomery, who's the star general, the British general. You quote at the end of your piece, if Creerer and McNaughton were in command today of the Canadian forces, they would have just as little use for U.S. control as they had for the British in the Second World War. They would see Ukrainian command of the CAF and the likes of Freeland as an abomination. Maybe that's putting more steel in Colonel Kearney's back than he deserves, but we all hope for something like that.
Look, let's be fair and be tactical. Kearney must not say anything, and his lawyers will not talk to the press. Why? Because they're negotiating out of the situation in which they've been put, not only by the CAF, but by Puglisi. So they can't discuss the matter because they've been libeled, defamed. And I hope well-known Canadian lawyers like Chris Black, whom you've mentioned, will sue ultimately for the defamation against Kearney by newspaper reporters like Puglisi. But that remains to be seen. It's clear that Kearney can't talk about a case about charges which haven't been brought against him, first. Second, his lawyers will be negotiating his release, the dropping of the charges, and a reassignment. Can he go on serving as the colonel in the British base after it's been clear that if he ever were called to trial and court-martial, he'd identify whom he was speaking, whether they were British or American officers, and he might even reveal the expletives that were used, and he might have to show in his defense the kinds of schemes, operations, plans, harebrained ideas, money-wasting, life-wasting ideas he was critical of. Well, clearly, that would be a disaster for the Freeland gang that run this war. They don't want a court-martial under CAF auspices to reveal military secrets of Canadian officers who think that the war they've been fighting was doomed to be lost. So I think it would be fair to say Kearney is not going to talk, but it is equally fair to say that if a fellow like me can dig up enough on the Kearney case to make it as much of a bombshell as it really is, one would look to Canadian reporters to find other officers willing to talk anonymously, perhaps, and explain what they believe is going on, because the Canadian senior officers group, colonel, lieutenant colonel, general level group, aren't dumbos. They aren't mutes. They're not fools. And as in World War II, they need to prove that they're professional, honorable soldiers and loyal ones too. So I don't think it's impossible to imagine that a lot of Canadian officers will talk to reporters about the Kearney case if given half a chance.
Well, we only got 2 minutes left here, John, and so much more to get to. But before we wrap up, the last person that was complaining about the war in a position of authority, or at least one of the most high-profile ones in Europe, was Robert Fico, the Slovak president who was gunned down just a couple weeks ago. He made an amazing address to the nation just today. Out of hospital, he was shot a number of times. I'm not exactly sure the nature of all of those wounds, but he says he's back, and he's not going away, and he's still opposing this war.
Well, it's gratifying that that Prime Minister Fico survived the attack on him. The gunman has admitted it was politically motivated, and the scheme has failed. If anything, in Slovakia, this will be a reinforcement of the obvious, a reinforcement of common sense, a reinforcement of small country understandings of what they have to do to survive as small countries when large powers try to pressure them into fighting losing wars. And Fico is a good example. Prime Minister Orban of Hungary is another example. There'll be more examples as we go along of common sense breaking out as the war's devastating impact, not only on the Ukrainians, but on the neighboring countries. These are countries which have banned Ukrainian grain, for example, imported to their economies because they're ruining their farmers. There's another piece the other day, if folks want to look at the impact of the war on the grain trade, which has been rather profitable for the Canadian wheat growers, but that's another story. So
yeah, your article is at, again, Dances with Bears, is EU deceit, French profiteering in the new grain sanctions against Russia. And that's another angle on it right there. Well, John, we're fast out of time. An hour has gone by too quickly. We didn't even get to Iran or Scott Ritter or the American House declaring war on the international criminal court or inviting Netanyahu to come and address them again next month, perhaps next month. There's always more to talk about than time. It's great to speak with you again, though, John, and thanks a lot for coming on tonight.
Thank you for having me again, Chris. Yes, there'll hopefully be for all of us next time, and the common sense will break out, but it is a big question for everybody to think about. After the war is obviously lost, after the Kiev regime has capitulated, what's going to be the story from the Ukrainian Deputy Prime Minister of Canada? What's the story after the war's lost? And we'll be back, I hope, to tell a bit of it.
Yeah, and that's not a sure thing, judging by the Ukraine military attacking the forward over the horizon radars of Russia. This is all getting rather nuclear. Thanks a lot, though, John, for coming on, and I look forward to next time.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you very much.
And that's all I've got this week. Until the next time, thanks for listening.
All the survivors remember the day when Israel attacked the USA. Down to the water they were met with an aerial slaughter as the IDF attacked all those trying to flee from the fires raging throughout the Liberty. A Soviet ship offered to assist as eventually the Israeli bombers would desist. Somehow the ship managed to limp into the bay when Israel attacked the USA. Johnson didn't want any unnecessary commotion. Just forget it ever happened. Squash the investigation. No Israelis were punished for committing any violation. They said it was an accident, a thin disguise. Everyone who witnessed believes this is a lie. It was entirely intentional. That's what they say when Israel attacked the USA. So they could classify everything. Top secret. Tell all the survivors don't talk about it. But finally, the truth has seen the light of day when Israel attacked the USA.